Our official attorney of this program is Lisa Lanier. Proud to have her as that. Segment is called Lawyer Up. She's president of the Lanier Law Group, lanierlawgroup.com, and you can get her online at our website as well, rock92.com. Keyword Lisa. Direct her email to her for all your legal questions. She's with us today talking about three interesting cases in the law. Lisa, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm a little bit on the allergy sort of cold side, but hanging in there, doing great.
What did I just? I think I just read that Greensboro is like number 7 in the country for worst allergies, and North Carolina.
That's terrible. It's got me sounding like the Marge Simpson sisters. You know, it's like Patty and
Selma.
Or
yeah. Chris Dim likes to do.
You do.
You do sound like that. I like it.
I don't hate it.
I think it's really nice.
Sexy. Yeah, you think it's sexy, right?
Yeah, it's a real sexy thing you've got going there. Yeah. Exactly. Will you be able to proceed in the courtroom, I hope, with a voice like that?
Yeah, yesterday, by the end of the day, my voice was completely gone because all I do all day long is talk. But for right now, I can carry off the Simpson sister sound.
I like it. Well, good. We got you early then.
Objection, Your
exactly.
Honor.
The other attorney's like, this is great. She's not objecting to anything.
I'll just say what I want.
Yeah. You're going to say anything?
Even I know that was BS.
Would you like to cross-examine?
No.
What? No. Absolutely not.
This is my life. Let him go.
Any objection, Ms. Lanier?
Fine.
We're fine. All right, Lisa. Let's talk about a couple of service animal stories in the news today. A woman named Kendra Velzen was told she could have her emotional support guinea pig in her pet-free dorm when she went to Grand Valley State University. She's 28 years old. But she was told she could not have it in dining hall areas and certain other areas on the campus of the university. Eventually, she had to leave, and she wound up suing the university for not letting her take her guinea pig everywhere, and she got $40,000. The case has been settled for $40,000. And this was surprising to me. I just felt like the university should be able to win by saying, yeah, you can have this very strange request of an emotional support guinea pig in a pet-free dorm, but isn't it reasonable not to have it in a dining hall?
Unfortunately for the university here, and I think this is a little bit of a stretch of the law, but in the last year or two, the ADA has expanded the definition of service animals to include emotional support animals. And so where, like in this situation, a psychiatrist has written a note saying that this girl needs the guinea pig for her emotional support, then she basically has to be accommodated. And I agree. I think, it goes a little bit far, but... but if you look at other types of service dogs, like for the blind or for, people with other disabilities, then they're allowed to come into restaurants and things. So once you expand that definition to include these emotional support animals, then it opens it up to them for them to go everywhere.
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened. She wound up getting $40,000, and the school has changed its policy. They will allow these dogs, or in this case, guinea pigs, everywhere on campus now. So she completely changed everything, and I guess they're within the law now, and that's the reason they had the change.
It is, and it is a change in the law to expand this definition. And another issue here is that the laws are becoming a little bit more restrictive when someone with a disability sues in a situation like this. Some of the state laws that had applied, as well as the federal laws, they're not actually supposed to be able to recover monetary damages in this situation, but the reason they settle is because there are attorney fees and other things that could be awarded, and so they oftentimes do settle these out of court.
Right, big university like that. Well, it's a pretty small college, but $40,000, I guess, they had at their disposal, and then they changed everything. Another story about a service animal. This one, to me, seems more cut and dry here. A girl named Regina Randlett and her family went to the Outer Banks and stopped at a fast food restaurant there. This little girl, who is 7, was attacked by a dog when she was 2, and because of it, she now has seizures and panic attacks, so she has a service dog herself. They went into the fast food restaurant, and the manager said, oh, no dogs. It's fast food. We're serving food here. And that traumatized the little girl because they made her get out, and the little girl was like, don't they like me? Don't they like my dog? So they've come under some fire here. The 7-year-old apparently was freaking out and wondering why the dog can't go in. In a case like that, do they just have to trust this is a service dog and let them in?
They can ask for a proof, because when you get a registered service dog, you get a little slip of paper that you can show people.
Yeah.
And but there have been some recent cases where they even say that that you can't demand it, like if they don't have the paper with them or something. But the thing that struck me as strange about this story, I mean, clearly the restaurant was in the wrong, mm-hmm. and this was a service dog, and they should have let it in. But I thought it was bizarre that if your kid was attacked by a dog, that you have a service dog as the... Isn't that weird?
I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Girl was attacked when she was two. It was tragic. You know, she had like a part of her, piece of her scalp was torn off. And because of it, she still has seizures and she's panicked all the time. And what did they get her? A dog.
Right. I thought that was kind of bizarre. But apparently it's working for her. Maybe she doesn't remember the attack or something. I don't know. But apparently she's pretty significantly damaged neurologically from this attack. So maybe she doesn't remember it. But I just thought... You know, get her a service monkey or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Or guinea pig.
Maybe this is just one badass dog. Other dog is going to mess with her.
Yeah. Maybe.
You know, she's got a Mr. T bodyguard kind of dog.
I guess she did, but I thought the exact same thing. But you're right, the restaurant should have certainly let her in. They didn't. But that must be kind of strange for a restaurant, because then you got possible dog hair and stuff like that. Feces.
They come into, these dogs are very well mannered. They sit, you know, very quietly beside the person, the disabled person. And I mean, you see them sometimes in restaurants, and they're not causing any harm.
Yeah.
You know, they should have accommodated it.
I can't even remember the last time I saw a dog in a restaurant, a service animal in a restaurant. But then again, I don't eat out much, so it's possible. I think you're probably right. What's that? Never. Too cheap.
Not through the drive-thru window.
When you have little kids, it's just too much hassle.
Good point. It's not through the drive-thru window. I don't see them. This next story, to me, is by far the most fascinating, and I really want to see how you what you think about this. There is a Lehigh County, Connecticut couple that had their daughter... who was actually sexually molested by a 65-year-old. He pled guilty in 2011 to doing this, their neighbor. He goes away, serves his, I think, 18 months in jail, then comes back. Now the couple is trying to sell their home, but because this man for life has to be labeled a sexual predator for what he did to their daughter, now lives right across the street. They're saying, we've been trying to sell our house, and nobody will buy it because a sexual predator lives there. They want to legally force him to buy the house. They're taking him to court over it, or at the very least move himself. We thought to ourselves, this is really bad for this poor couple that can't sell their house now, and they're forced to live next to this guy who molested their daughter. But it seems like there's nothing legally that can be done about it. Are we right or wrong on that?
You're right. I mean, it's a very unusual request, and there's no precedence for it whatsoever, and there's really no basis for the court to be able to step in and force someone to buy their neighbor's home. I mean, it's very creative lawyering, and I think, you know, they have some valid claims here for damages. I mean, when someone is molested, you can sue the molester, you can sue people in the home who should have protected the child if they were negligent in failing to do so, and, you know, you can recover damages. So they have an avenue for damages, and I think that there's even a creative application of nuisance law where, you know, if your neighbor has a pig farm or something and the odor is keeping you from enjoying your property, you can get injunctive relief and sometimes damages against that person. So I think they might be able to loop in some additional damages for the sort of the nuisance with regard to their property.
Yeah.
I think they'll get some money, but not buying their house.
So what they should do is what you're saying is sue him, take him to court, and that way get some money to offset what they're going to lose by selling the house, then sell the house at a loss.
Exactly. They can recover some damages, and then they can sell their house. And they may just be dumping in these additional claims, you know, to try to just get more money. And you could even be, you know, you can be creative about, you could maybe enter into a settlement agreement where he agrees to buy the house, but the court is not going to require that.
Boy, I feel bad for him, though. I really do, because...
Oh, it's horrible.
Not only is he a sexual predator, the act was committed on their daughter. Yeah. I mean, just bad as he...
Yeah, it's horrible. I couldn't live next to that person. In fact, I don't see how people like that can keep from just killing that guy.
I know. And if I was them, I would have moved while he was in prison, you know, before he came back and had to register as a sexual offender.
They only had 18 months, man.
I know, and they probably thought, surely he's not going to come back. But he did. He's right there again. 65 years old, and they got to live right next to him. Now,
look at him. Yeah, can you imagine? You go out every morning, and you'd see the guy probably, coming out of his house.
He's a red dot. I think he glows. He's got a big old red dot on him.
I meant when you Google the house.
Oh. I'm sorry.
Tech thing.
Oh, I don't know about that. You can do that. You can Google him, and a big red dot would. I bet you most of us have red dots living somewhere near us.
I look at mine all the time.
Do you?
Yeah, I do too. And it's actually one of those things now that realtors are becoming aware of, and they're actually warning people when they buy a house, you know, because there have been claims where realtors, they're saying that realtors should have disclosed that when they were selling a house that there was a sexual predator next door. And pretty much the cases are holding that no, you know, it's kind of a buyer beware situation.
I see. So it's not on the realtor to do it. The buyer has to know it, needs to figure
it
out.
Those little forms that you get from the realtor, you know, when they give you like 10 pages of paperwork that you never read.
Right.
You start working with them. One of those things oftentimes now is to say, you might want to check the sex offender registry. Just, you know, it's not good because we're not going to warn you.
It's a shame. It's the world we live in. We have to do that. Thank you, Lisa Lanier, our official attorney of this program. Some advice for you. Start smoking. I like the way you sound. I like this new you.
I'll go get a pack of Marlboro.
I think it's great. Lisa's the president of the Lanier Law Group. If you need any help from her, lanierlawgroup.com or our website, rock92.com. Keyword Lisa for the email.